Programming for The Reba Show is proudly underwritten in part by the Arlington Tomorrow Foundation, contributing to a thriving Arlington, and in part by the Texas Association of Realtors Housing Opportunity Foundation. Funding is also provided by generous donations from listeners like you.
I am Salvador Villalobos. You are listening to The Reba Show, Homeownership. Hear it from the experts in the Blue Stream and the Fishbowl Network. Co-hosting with me today is Leticia Gallegos. Today's special guest is Jeff Law. Today we are speaking of property tax values. Welcome, Jeff. Thank you for being part of the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, Jeff has an impressive background. He's a native of Burleson, Texas, resides with his wife and twin daughters. He graduated from TCU, or Texas Christian University, with a Bachelor of Business Administration in Finance. Jeff currently serves as the Chief Appraiser for Tarrant Appraisal District. Prior to TAD, he served as for more than 10 years as a Chief Appraiser of Hood County Appraisal District, and has collectively worked as a Chief Appraiser for 20 years and in the property tax profession for more than 30 years. Jeff serves as President of the Texas Association of Appraisal District in 2013, and is also a member of the Texas Association of Assessing Officers and an International Association of Assessing Officers. Jeff also serves as on the Fort Worth Aviation Advisory Board. Jeff is certified property tax instructor for the State Comptroller's Office and is a past recipient of the Certified Tax Administrator of the Year Award. Jeff is frequently a speaker for state property tax associations, civic and local community groups. Welcome again.
Thank you.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
Credentials here. So Jeff, tell us a little bit about your role as the chief.
All right. Thanks again for the invitation. My job as Chief Appraiser of Tarrant County is primarily to do a couple of things. One is to appraise all property in Tarrant County as of January the 1st at market value. Now, in Tarrant County, we have a little over 1.8 million property accounts, taxable property accounts. We have homesteads, residential properties, commercial properties, industrial, and we have about 1.1 million mineral accounts. So it's our job as county appraisers to appraise property at market value, what the properties would sell for on January the 1st. It's a very daunting task. About 720,000 properties comprise of that real property, personal property. And we go out and we go into the marketplace. We follow the market. We don't set the market. Realtors, brokers, salespeople, buyers and sellers, they're the ones that establish what properties are worth. Basically through sales transactions. That's one thing. We use three approaches to value when we appraise property. The market approach, which is basically the evaluation of what properties sell for. We also utilize the cost approach, which is what would it cost to build a home new, and then take into account any depreciation that the home may have suffered as a result of wear and tear, things of that nature. And then there's another approach that's mainly used in the commercial side called the income approach. We analyze the income stream that a property can make as an investment. That's typically not used in the residential side, the market approach and the cost approach. But the market approach is a very good indicator of what something's worth, because you have a buyer and a seller that negotiate the seller, obviously, what they're going to sell it for, and the buyer, how much they're going to pay for it. And that tends to be a very good indicator of what things are worth.
Now, is that over a larger or more targeted area?
Typically, when we appraise properties, we will look at it on a neighborhood basis. We try to categorize every single property in Tarrant County into some type of neighborhood, whether it's commercial property or whether it's residential property. And then we try to look at data within that neighborhood to determine what's the going price, what's the going price per square foot. When we look at properties, we take into consideration their location, obviously, what neighborhood they're in, but we also take into consideration the age of the home. I don't want to compare brand new homes to older homes. That would not be comparable. And we also take into consideration the size of homes. I don't want to compare a 4,000 square foot sold home to a 2,000 square foot home. So age, size, and the location are three primary factors. And a lot of times we'll take into consideration characteristics, individual characteristics of the property. Many times homes are not perfect. Sometimes homes have cracked foundations. Sometimes they have wear and tear on wood that's rotted or repainting that needs to be done or roofing that needs to be done. So we'll a lot of times look at individual characteristics like that.
Now, you're saying conditions or the condition of the property, a characteristic. What if a home is in complete distress? It's abandoned. Would the future owner or the buyer of that property, would there be some kind of relief since they're buying a property, will be investing in that property? Or is it reflected in the sales price?
It would be reflected in the sales price, I would imagine, because if I'm an investor or somebody that wants to come in and buy one of these really distressed homes, I obviously wouldn't pay the same price that I would pay for a home that's not in that distress. So that's reflected many times in the sales or in the sales price.
Well, let's say a homeowner is buying a property with one of these renovation loans, and the sales price is $150,000, mm-hmm. where the typical value of a home in that area is $275,000. Now, that person buying that property at $150,000, I'm imagining that the person that owned that property purchased it in 2007 at the height of the values. They're probably going to be paying a much higher tax rate than somebody that buys a house for $150,000. Is that correct?
It's possible. In your example, I'm assuming that the $150,000 home would be that distressed home.
Correct.
Where the $275,000 homes would be those homes that are livable, not in distress.
Correct.
Yeah, we would take that into consideration. I hear a lot of times property owners will come in and say, well, I just paid, you know, $150,000 for my home, mm-hmm. but they may have paid that price 3 or 4 years ago. That sales price 3 or 4 years ago would not necessarily be valid or reflective of what's happening in the marketplace today. But if it's duress, if it's a troubled home with problems and it has a recent sales price, we absolutely would consider something like that, even though other properties around are bringing much more.
That's great to know. Information.
But a lot of times what we need is people to bring us that information. Since I appraise literally 1.8 million properties every year, I am not privileged to know everything about every property. We typically don't let our appraisers go into people's homes for your safety and for our safety. So it's important that if there is an issue or if someone has a distressed property like that, that they bring that information to us. We appraise on the mass appraisal approach, which means that we're appraising a universe of properties as of a given date. We use a lot of appraisal modeling and we use a lot of statistics in our appraisal process. So that process alone sometimes doesn't allow us to know the really small detailed characteristics that each individual properties have. So it's imperative that the property owners kind of play a role as well to help us understand more about the property so that we can mm-hmm. be accurate on our appraisals.
So what would be the process? What documentation would they need to provide you or your department? Do they go into the office? Do they call? Do they go online?
That's a great question, and it's one that I tell people all the time. Evidence is their best friend. Photos, the old adage of a photo speaks 1,000 words, that's really true. And so if a person can bring us photos of distressed issues, you know, maybe painting that needs to be done, roofing that needs to be done, foundation cracks, things like that. That's all evidence that we will take into consideration. If they don't have that on the property, then closing documents, contracts for sale, things of that nature. If there's a foundation problem, an engineer's report. If they need a new roof, maybe an estimate from a roofer. If they need, structural work inside the home, maybe an estimate from a contractor, showing what it would cost to repair and bring that house back up to a good livable condition. We want to make sure that we get those right. And again, when you're appraising as many properties as we do, we get a lot right. but we do get some wrong. We appraise some too low, and we appraise some too high. But those that are appraised too high, we want the taxpayers to come see us, come talk to us. You mentioned online. We do have an online protest process that we encourage people to use, because not only can you file a protest online, but you can also go to our website and you can log in with an account and pull up data that we are used in comparison to your property, so you can see other comparable sales data from the privacy of your own home. You don't necessarily have to come to our office to see that. You can get that from going to our website at www.tad.org.
So can you repeat that again, please?
www.tad.org.
It's very impressive. I went into the website, and it's you've changed it quite a bit. Very user friendly, and it's a great resource.
Well, thank you very much. That was our goal. We've actually reached out to several community people. We've invited people to come and be sort of testers of our website. And yes, I do think it's working very well. And we're getting a lot of compliments from people coming in this year talking about how well it's helped them in this process.
Great.
Now, you said characteristics when we were talking about distress, but what if there's a miscount in rooms, a shed that's no longer there? Because I imagine a shed would also cause a tax consequence, right?
Yes, that is correct. And that's the type of information that we would encourage people to bring to us. We do, our primary focus is the value of land, the value of the structure on that land, other things such as detached garages, swimming pools, things of that nature we feel will add value. We do get questions a lot of time, well, what if I buy a shed from like a Lowe's or a Home Depot? Well, we may not necessarily feel that that small shed adds value. If it doesn't add value, we normally won't use it in the appraisal process.
So does it have to be in the foundation?
Not necessarily. We seriously look at it from a standpoint that would, you know, and I like to tell taxpayers, when you drive up to the property as a potential buyer, you're like, oh my gosh, look at that shed, and you're excited about it, you might be willing to pay more for it that it's there. But if you look at it and say, oh yeah, that's a place I can store my lawnmower, that shed might not really be adding value. You may not be willing to pay more because it exists. So a lot of times it depends on the size of the shed, the size of the detached garage, the size of the extra improvements that are out there really determines whether or not it's going to actually add value.
Above ground or below ground?
Primarily below ground.
Okay.
Yeah, the above ground pools can be damaged too easily and can be taken down too quickly, so they normally don't add much value.
Okay, great. Do you have any questions?
Okay, so let's go back a little bit to the correlation between the independent appraiser that usually a lender hires to do the appraisal before the purchase and what your office does. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, as I said before, our office uses a mass appraisal approach to valuation, which essentially involves a lot of statistics and a lot of appraisal modeling and computer assistance. Again, we're appraising 720,000 real property and personal property accounts. And so to do that, we build appraisal models. And that's a technique that's used in our type of appraisal. An independent fee appraiser, on the other hand, will not use appraisal models. They will go to the homeowner, property owner. They'll come inside the house. They'll get information provided to them, possibly by the banker, the lending institution, possibly by the property owner themselves. Mm-hmm. They will be able to take pictures all the way around the home. And they can actually spend 2 to 3 days, maybe a week, actually performing an appraisal on an individual property. We simply do not have that kind of time. Texas appraisal districts all throughout the state use the mass appraisal approach, where we're appraising a large number of properties relatively quickly. But the independent appraiser, he or she is going to have much more time to sit down and analyze sales, look at data. They a lot of times will know more information about an individual property. So when they make adjustments to their comparable sales, they have more time and they have more knowledge and more information. We tend to lack that independent or that intimate knowledge about certain properties. So the modeling or the statistics is what we rely upon a lot of times. Again, we get a lot of them right, and sometimes we get some wrong, but that's this time of the year right now is that time in which we're trying to iron out those differences through the protest process.
Okay. Is there a certain amount of time? Let's say I purchased the property The statements came out
April 1st,
but they were actually calculated before then, weren't they?
Yes, our appraisal date, the effective date for Texas appraisals is typically January the 1st of each year. So yes, mm-hmm. if you've just now purchased it in April, that would still be a sale that we might consider. The real estate market right now is on an upward swing, so we might make an adjustment to that appraisal price and discount it a little bit. But if someone, say, bought their property January the 1st of 2018, anytime in 2018, we would think that would probably be a valid sale date, mm-hmm. and we would look at it and give it some serious credence as to what the information provides. Someone who bought a piece of property back in 2016, 2017, that's a little old. The data is a little outdated. And the real estate market that we're in, quite frankly, has been the best I've seen in decades. And so someone who's bought a home in 16 or 17, I would be a little more cautious about referencing that data. Now, if it was a highly unique property, I might consider it. You know, a 15,000, 20,000 square foot house, that we don't have many of those type sales come around very often. So, something like that, it might be a valid sale to consider. But most we try to go within 6 months of January 1st or maybe a year back.
Okay. All right. Very well. So tell us a little bit about let's start with the website. On the website, they can actually fill out forms you have forms there for someone that wants to protest. What other kind of information would you have on the website?
Okay, great question. We do provide almost all the forms that the Texas State Comptroller has created with regards to property tax. Now, most of our forms right now, you have to pull them up, print them out, and fill them out manually. We don't have, at this time, a way that you can fill them out and submit them electronically, primarily because of signature issues, digital signature issues. Also on our website, we provide really a link to any property in Tarrant County where you can pull that up and find out what it's been appraised for, who owns the property, the legal description of the property, things of that nature. In addition to that, on our website, we have this protest process. Now, if most people who got the blue form from us, in the upper right-hand corner, there's a PIN number, a PIN number, and it looks kind of like a password. That's the personal identification number that a property owner is going to need in order to protest or look at their data online. The way to do that is click on the login button on our website. And when it pulls up, if you've created a login in the past, you can put your username and your password that you've created, and it'll pull up a dashboard where it'll have all the accounts that you have linked, that you have PIN numbers for. But if you've never done it before, you can do it the first time, and you can set up the account that you have using that PIN number on the blue form. And it'll let you see sales comps that we've used, equity comps that we've established for your property. And so there's a wealth of information there. We also have some helpful videos. If someone's not sure exactly how to protest online, we have some videos out there as well to try to step people through. And I think we even have videos on how to file a protest or how to come to the appraisal review board hearings if they go to a formal protest, and how to go through that process as well.
Very good.
Question. Now, let's say that one of the properties, a homeowner, first-time home buyer, looking to purchase this home, fall in love with it, but the seller is actually a business, some kind of investor. I would imagine that the tax rate would be higher for an investment property, or would it be the same for a homeowner versus an investor?
Okay, great question. Actually, tax rates are not set by the appraisal district. Tax rates are actually established by the local elected government. Okay. The city, for example, City of Arlington or the City of Fort Worth, they will establish a tax rate. Now, that tax rate is the same for all properties. Doesn't matter whether it's residential or commercial or business personal property. The difference would be the value between them. So we may have one value for residential properties. We may have a completely different value for the commercial. But the tax rate itself would be the same for whatever type of property category.
Okay, so we'll follow up with this interesting conversation after the break.
Okay. Great. All right, let's go to break.
I'm about to do it for you. I like to break it down. This joint has got me open. Ooh, that's my favorite song. I put my thing in motion. I do it all night long.
You're listening to The Reba Show, Homeownership, Hear It From The Experts, in the Blue Stream of the Fishbowl Radio Network. My name is Leticia Gallegos, and I'm here as co-host with our host, Salvador Villalobos, and our special guest today is Jeff Law, Chief Appraiser for the Tarrant Appraisal District. So if you want to join in, we'd love for you to become part of the conversation. Please call us at 214-431-5062. Ask the question. Now that we have the expert here, you've received your little blue slip in the mail, and I know you have questions. So give us a call. We're here to answer them. 214-431-5062. So before the break, we were talking about the process for disputes or protests. So Jeff, what is the deadline for homeowners to protest?
In the state of Texas, May 15th is the deadline for filing a protest with the Appraisal Review Board. However, if a person gets an appraisal notice after April 15th, then the law is they have 30 days from the date that notice was mailed, or May 15th, whichever is later. But typically, okay, it's May 15th.
Okay. And so then once they fill out the forms and protest, when is it completed?
Well, usually we will start our appraisal review board process around May the 20th. And generally, we're trying to get at least 95% to 97% of all of our protests heard by July the 25th. I have a law that says I'm supposed to certify to the taxing units the values for 2019 on or right at July the 25th.
Okay, great information. Okay, so let's talk about exemptions. Is there a residential appraisal cap? I mean, there is.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And actually, exemptions are a great way for property owners to find some type of property tax relief. Most of the taxing jurisdictions in Tarrant County offer some type of exemption. The first one being just a general residential homestead exemption, which anyone that owns a home on January the 1st, lives in that home on January the 1st, and is not claiming a homestead exemption anywhere else can be entitled to. And they need to apply at our office. We have forms available. You can either, again, print them offline or come to our office and fill them out. And one of the benefits of applying for and getting a residential homestead exemption is that it establishes your ability to enjoy what we call an appraisal cap. If your market value increases substantially 1 year over the next, we actually look back to the prior year, and we have three values: a market value, which is what the property would sell for as of a given date. We have appraised value, which is nothing really more than a math calculation. It's a look back. And then we have a third value called taxable value. Well, market value is just what it is. It's what the property would sell for, what it's worth. Appraised value is where this 10% appraisal cap comes in. And if you have a homestead exemption, the law says that your appraised value, not necessarily your market value, but your appraised value can only increase at 10% per year. So it does puts in a limitation on how much your taxes can escalate year over year. Mm-hmm. The taxable value, on the other hand, is actually where all the exemptions come in. For example, if you live in the city of Fort Worth, they offer a 20% homestead exemption. So if you have a $100,000 house, the city of Fort Worth will automatically knock off $20,000 of your value. And instead of paying tax on $100,000, you'd only pay tax on $80,000. So it is a benefit where you will save a homeowner a little bit of money, but they have to come in and apply. Mm-hmm. Another exemption, for example, is a 60.
Before you go on, let me ask you this. So the form that, so let's say we have a purchaser that purchased his home in 2018, and now he's lived in his home through a January, correct? So he's now wanting to file an exemption.
Correct.
They have to live in the home on a January, correct?
On January the 1st.
January the 1st. The form requires proof.
Correct.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because what we're seeing sometimes in the community is that someone purchased the home using a different type of identification, passport, that kind of thing. So tell, is it possible to file the form with certain ID proof?
Great question. Thanks for asking it. Mm-hmm. Texas law requires, in order to in order to be eligible for a homestead exemption, like I said, you had to own the home on January 1st and live on the home on January 1st, but you also have to provide a valid driver's license, Texas driver's license. And the law requires that the address on your driver's license must match the physical address of the home where you're residing. Now, you can have a different mailing address, and we can mail tax bills to different places, but your driver's license has to match. The address on your driver's license has to match the physical address. The law also provides that you can have a Texas state ID as long as the address is matched. Now, we have had situations in the past where we've had some Mexican nationals, I guess we could call them, that have come in and they own the home, but all they have is the Mexican ID card. That's not a valid form of identification in the state of Texas. Texas legislature has decided that you must have a valid Texas driver's license in order to obtain a homestead exemption.
So in that case, they could not obtain the exemption.
That's correct. And we've had some that have come in that have tried to use their passports and things like that. And again, that's not according to the state law, it's not a valid form of ID. It has to be a driver's license or a Texas state ID.
No federal tax returns.
Nope, nothing like that. Okay. Yeah, the legislature was very specific when they implemented the law. I think it was two sessions ago. Maybe it might have been longer than that. That said, they wanted to make sure that the address on the driver's license matches the address of the property.
Is there any other reasoning that you know of?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
You'd have to get them on the radio.
Yes. Write that down. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's go ahead and follow through with the other exemptions
that
are available.
Over 65, or people that are 65 years of age or older can apply for an additional exemption. It's in addition to the general homestead exemption. And this offers them even more exemptions. For example, a school district for people that are young can get a $25,000 discount when we calculate their taxes. But if they're 65 or older, there's an additional $10,000 that's added to it. Another benefit of getting a 65 or older exemption is something called a tax ceiling. The first year in which a property owner is eligible to qualify for this exemption, the very next, we calculate their taxes, but the very next year, if their value goes up or if the tax rates change, go up, that they have a ceiling established. I get asked many times, what is actually the ceiling? Is it the value no longer can change? Is it the tax rate can no longer change? No, it's not. It's the actual amount of taxes that we calculate, set and establish the ceiling. So if we calculate it for a school district and your taxes are calculated at $1,300, then you'll never pay more than $1,300 for school taxes again, unless you add on to the property. You can do remodeling, you can do maintenance on the property and things like that, but as long as you don't add to the property, you have a tax ceiling and your taxes will never go up. There is, in Tarrant County, there's a couple of caveats. One, the hospital district does not have a tax ceiling, and the water district doesn't have a tax ceiling, so those taxes could remain. Okay. Another important part about the homestead exemption is, and we try our best to help taxpayers with this all the time, you mentioned earlier the January 1st. Let's say a person bought the home in 2015, and they live there. They bought it in July of 2015. They live there for January 1st of 16. They live there January 1st of 17, 18, and now here it is January 1st of 19. They can come in and apply today, and we actually can go back 2 years. So we can give them a homestead exemption all the way back to 17. So they can get an exemption for 17, 18, and then now we can give them an exemption for 2019. And it's possible that if the calculations work out, they might actually get a refund of taxes for the tax years 17 and 18.
Wow, that's great. That's good to know. That's very good to know. All right, so any other disability? How about a disability exemption?
A disabled person is entitled to an exemption. Very, very similar exemption to the 65 and older. Mm-hmm. There's also a tax ceiling component to the disabled person's exemption. The qualifications are a little bit different. Obviously, we have to determine whether or not you're disabled. Mm-hmm. And we actually use the Social Security Administration to help make that determination. If a person is receiving disability benefits from the Social Security Administration and they have the right paperwork, then they can be entitled to a disabled person's exemption.
What is the right paperwork?
It's basically a form from the Social Security Administration identifying that they are disabled and they've been deemed disabled. And
permanent disabled? Or
not necessarily permanent, no. Okay. It can be a type of disability, okay, and that they're receiving disability benefits from the Social Security Administration.
Now, what if you have somebody that's a senior citizen, disabled, and they're a veteran?
Great question. In the state of Texas, they would be entitled to a general homestead exemption, but then they would have to choose between the disabled person's exemption or the 65 and older. And really, it probably is best to determine whichever one occurs first. If they turn 65 before they become disabled, they most likely would want to apply for that 65 exemption when they mm-hmm. turn 65. Yeah. However, if they were disabled long before they turned 65, it might be to their benefit just to continue with the disabled persons exemptions and not apply for the 65 and older. And we would help them try to make that decision as to what is the best benefit for them.
Right. Took the words right out of my mouth.
Well, you asked about disabled veterans.
Right.
Yes. That's another type of exemption that can be applied to individuals that have become disabled either while on active duty or even after. Sometimes people, mm-hmm. you know, go overseas and are in the military. Something happens and they become disabled after. Same situation kind of applies here in that we rely upon the Veterans Administration to determine if the veteran is a disabled individual. Again, there's paperwork that will determine their level of disability. And for disabled veterans, there's a sliding scale somewhere between $5,000 and $12,000 worth of exemption, depending upon the percentage of disability that the Veterans Administration has determined that they are disabled. There's one other disabled veterans exemption, and it's called a 100% disabled veteran exemption. Mm-hmm. And if a person, a military individual, was disabled while on active duty, and again, the Veterans Administration determines that they are 100% disabled, mm-hmm. then they can actually receive a 100% exemption from property taxes on their homestead.
Do they have to? That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Do they have to apply year after year, or is it a one-time application?
Good question. For homestead exemptions, it's typically a one-time application. Mm-hmm. We do periodically ask that people to reapply. Like, for example, people that are 65 and older, we will ask them, say, over 5 to 10 years to reapply just to make sure that they still qualify for mm-hmm. the exemption. But normally it's a one-time exemption.
Would they be reversing in age so they wouldn't qualify any longer?
No, probably not. I hope not. Haven't had that happen yet.
So it's only for 100% disabled. Let's say someone is 40% disabled veteran.
Yeah, they would be eligible for the disabled veteran exemption, but
which is not 40% of
no,
because there's some question about
right,
that.
No, for people, and you're testing my memory now, but people that are like 10 to 20%, they'll mm-hmm. receive like a $5,000 exemption. If you're 20 to 50% disabled, you okay. receive like a $7,500 exemption. If you're okay. 50% to like 75%, I think it's $10,000. And then if it's like 75% all the way up to 100, mm-hmm. then you receive like $12,000. But the 100% totally disabled is a different exemption authorized by law. Now, I may be off on those percentages and those numbers. They would need to check with our office or maybe our website to get that exactly correct.
All right. Well, we're going to take another break here. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, please call us 214-431-5062. You're listening to The Reba Show, homeownership. Hear it from the experts in the blue stream of the Fishbowl Radio Network.
Watching my favorite show, PJs, popcorn and ice cream with no makeup on. My girls drag me out to a party, I didn't wanna go. I walked in and that's when I saw you, my heart hit the floor. I get weird, I get shy, and you are the reason why. I get weak, wanna die, when you look me in the eye. Is it all in my mind?
programming for The Reba Show is proudly underwritten in part by the Arlington Tomorrow Foundation, contributing to a thriving Arlington, and in part by the Texas Association of Realtors Housing Opportunity Foundation. Funding is also provided by generous donations from listeners like you.
You're listening to The Reba Show, homeownership, hear it from the experts in the Blue Stream on the Fishbowl Radio Network. Hello, my name is Salvador Villalobos. I'm here with Leticia Gallegos, my co-host, and Jeff Law, chief appraiser with the Tarrant County Appraisal District. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 214-431-5062. Again, that number is 214-431-5062. We do have a call on the line, Jeff, if you would be so kind to answer her question. It's from Jennifer Valdez in Hearst. And her question is...
her name is Jessica.
Oh, Jessica. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I believe her question had to do with how we evaluate property. And basically, we use a mass appraisal approach to appraise properties all throughout Tarrant County, and all appraisal districts in Texas use the same type of mass appraisal approach. But generally, what we're looking for in the residential area is that we'll either use the cost approach to value or the market approach to value. In the cost approach, we will look at what would it cost to reconstruct a home as of new, and then allow for any depreciation, any type of deterioration, whether it's physical, economic, or functional losses in value. And to make adjustments, because obviously not all homes are brand new. That's one approach we use. The other approach is the market approach, where we actually look at comparable sales data. Sales are a great indicator of what something's worth. When a buyer and a seller come together on an agreed sales price, obviously the buyer's willing to pay that price and the willer's willing to accept that price. So sales become a great indication of what something is worth. So primarily we'll use a combination of the cost approach and the sales approach to determine value. And as I mentioned before, we have 1.8 million properties all throughout Tarrant County that we appraise, and we get a lot right and we get some wrong. So during this protest period that she mentioned, we take the opportunity to talk with property owners, to look at the property characteristics that we may not know about, and try to make adjustments again so that the values are reflect the correct market value for the current tax year.
Now, Jeff, you're saying protest, appeal, they can go to your website and do that individually themselves, or we did touch base on during the break regarding using an organization or company to assist you in appealing your taxes or protesting. What's your take on that?
Yes, we encourage all taxpayers to start by going to our website and maybe trying the online protest themselves. However, if sometimes people don't have time to maybe come down to the appraisal district, they may not have time to go through a formal protest hearing before the appraisal review board, and they may choose to use an outside firm. Some firms out there will represent homeowners. Some firms tend to be more in the commercial side and just represent commercial property owners, but they serve a purpose. They help us get through this process rather quickly. They do charge fees many times for their services, and they are they're used to this process. Sometimes we run into taxpayers that might feel intimidated about the process. They shouldn't be. I mean, homeowners, we try our best to make people feel comfortable. We try to answer all their questions. We were actually given one of the best compliments I've ever had before. We had a taxpayer come in the other day and told us that we were the Chick-fil-A of government offices.
Awesome.
And I thought that,
that
was...
That is a compliment.
I thought that was the best compliment ever.
Is that because you don't open on Sundays, or...?
No. I think it was our friendly smiles.
That's great.
We try our best to sit down with the taxpayer, work with the taxpayer, because again, we may not know everything about the characteristics of each individual property, and so we invite people. So property owners can try it themselves. They should see a friendly face down at the appraisal district, or if they don't, they can choose one of these consultants, an attorney, something like that, to represent them.
Okay, great. So question regarding, you said, and because Jessica wasn't on the line earlier, characteristics of property, miscount in rooms,
that's another appeal that can protest?
It would be more along the lines of square footage. Okay. We normally don't, since we don't go into people's homes, we normally don't get room counts so much.
Okay.
But we do go out and we try to measure every new home that's constructed. So many times where we might have some discrepancies might be in the square footage that we've calculated. Now, there are two things that people need to understand about us calculating square footage. Number one is we don't take it to the nearest inch. We will round either up or round down. Based upon inches. So that's going to sometimes cause some differences. The other thing that we do also is that we measure to the exterior of the brick. So I don't know how necessarily architects determine the actual living area. Mm-hmm. But we will try to separate out the garages and from the covered porches from the air-conditioned space. And a lot of times when we go and get into second-story buildings, if we can't get access to the interior of a new construction, there could be some opportunities for miscalculation there, or maybe there's a jag in a wall that we can't see from the outside that we might consider living area. But we're willing to work with property owners if they'll bring in their building plans or sketches. Sometimes when you buy and sell properties, a fee appraiser comes out and appraises a property. They'll a lot of times do a sketch. Mm-hmm. And so they could bring in that appraisal, and we can make adjustments sometimes to sketches. So it's not so much room count as it is more of the actual living area square footage.
Okay. Now, you have a multifamily, a 2 to 3, 4-unit property in a residential area where it's primarily single-family homes.
Correct.
There's not that many comparable properties in the area. How do you determine a value?
Well, we will use, let me ask this question, value of the single-family residence or value of the multifamily?
Of the multifamily that you're trying to tax.
Well, we will try our best to find comparable data on something like that. And again, if we can't find comparable sales data, we may rely on the cost approach more and try to use what would it cost to rebuild, kind of like an insurance company, the replacement cost new. Another approach to value is the income approach. And since typically 1 to 2 family, duplex, triplex, they're income-producing properties, we could also utilize the income approach and maybe develop a gross rent multiplier or a gross rent monthly multiplier to give us an indication of what that might be worth.
Can you give us your website?
It's www.tad.org, www.tad.org.
Okay, great. So you can go there to get more information. Leticia?
Okay. Please. Great, great information, Mr. Law. We really, really appreciate you being here. So, here at the REBA Show, our goal is to inform and to serve the community. That's what we do. We bring information about home ownership to people that are preparing to purchase their home or our community that is wanting to sustain their home, because property taxes is a huge part of their monthly payment. And also to information that will help them become more financially savvy. So we do all that. So our hope is that you, the listener, will engage with us here at the REBA Show and become a loyal fan of this, the REBA Show. We appreciate you listening. And so tell us, Mr. Law, Jeff Law, what does home ownership mean to you personally? Can you tell us what...
Well, it's a place where I can raise my family. It's a place I can go home and rest after a busy, hard day. It's, you know, my wife and I, we enjoy our home and we enjoy the peace and the rest that we can get there. Mm-hmm. I think it's awesome that everybody should be able to enjoy that same thing. But it is a lot of times the most expensive asset that they'll ever buy. And you are correct in that there is a lot of expenses that go along with it, and that people should be savvy and understand some of those things. And property taxes is a big thing. One thing I would like to point out is I see it time and time again where people buy homes for the first time, and a title company or a lender will calculate their escrow. And I would just want to caution people to make sure that if they're buying their home from elderly people that might have enjoyed this tax ceiling, that's something that they need to be wary of and understand that their taxes going forward, if they're not 65 or older, will may be way different than the property taxes from the previous owner. So they need to work closely with their mortgage companies and their escrow amounts to make sure they're not short. I've seen several instances where property owners' escrow amounts go up $500 and $600 per month because they the way the taxes were calculated.
Yes, that's a very good point. So again, my name is Leticia Gallegos. I'm here with Salvador Villalobos and our special guest, Mr. Jeff Jeff Law. So thank you, Mr. Law, for sharing your time with us today. We really, really appreciate you. I just have a couple of announcements to make. Our golf tournament is our largest fundraiser of the year, and that is going to be May 13th at the Diamond Oaks Country Club. Go to our website at Reba Connect. That's REBACONNECT.org and register. Our deadline for registration is April 29th. So please join us. And we may still have some sponsorships available, some whole sponsorships. So those of you that are listening that are golfers, please go and buy and register. We are the Hispanic Real Estate Brokers Association, a registered 501c3 nonprofit corporation. We've been streaming live on Facebook. You can see a replay of the video on the Reba Show Facebook page and also on your YouTube channel where you can subscribe to see future videos. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Reba Show. This episode is also available on a podcast on the Reba Show page at fbrn.us. You can also find it on any podcast app. You can learn about topics that we have planned for upcoming shows on our website at rebaconnect.org, clicking on the Reba Show. If you learned something today, we would love a donation to continue our funding for this program and other community outreach efforts. Visit rebaconnect.org and click on the donate button on the homepage. If you have any specific questions or comments, you may email us at rebashow@rebaconnect.org. Again, I am Leticia Gallegos, and I'm with Salvador Villalobos, and thank you again, Mr. Law, for being here. Thank you for listening. Have a great afternoon.
See you next week.
The only streets like we're royalty, with empty pockets and worn out jeans.